Welcome back. It's a Wednesday, the 25th day of October, 2023. I'm your host, Mark Call. I'm going to start off today's look at what's going on around the nation and the world with another one of these, this one should have been predicted, and almost certainly was, kinds of stories. Comes from Tyler Durden and Zero Hedge about the prices of ammunition in once-free America. As the Israeli-Hamas war, they say, sparks fears of World War III. That's putting it mildly, folks. World War III has been in progress for quite a while. It's just been escalating quite a bit of late. Law-abiding Americans are once again streaming the chaos in Israel and Gaza on their smartphones, the smart TVs, and so forth, and they've come to the obvious conclusion. It's time to panic buy ammo, just like we did back during COVID. And probably, folks, for a lot of the same reasons. They really do want you dead. New data from the ammo tracking website called Ammo Prices Now shows that 5.56 NATO caliber ammunition listed online by popular brands surged 39% in just the past week alone, up from 36 cents a round to 50 cents a round on October 14th. The price spike is significantly larger than the move even back in early 2022 when Russia took the Biden bait and invaded Ukraine. Oh, yeah, and let's not forget, 223 Remington, a very similar round, surged 42% last week as well. But there's more to this, evidently, than just the threat of an expanded World War III. Americans are also watching the Ukraine war, at least a few of them that didn't realize that at least that front was largely over a while ago, and the imploding U.S. cesspool cities, governed by radical leftist progressives who could obviously care less about law and order. And all of these developments, it says, are stoking yet another run on ammo. Well, folks, there's one other indicator that some of us have pointed to of late. Remember that big fire at a manufacturing plant just last week that made, past tense, exactly this kind of ammunition, which isn't even the first indicator of the Biden regime's desire, to put it mildly, to cut off such sales to American civilians anyway. I'd enlist this next story as another potential reason for the recent surge in the prices of ammunition, but it's not too much of a stretch to suggest it might be related. This one comes from Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s Children's Health Defense, written by Mike Capuso, and it's about how the White Whorehouse orchestrated the satanically evil cover-up of the heart damage that is caused by the COVID-19, a.k.a. Zyklon B, not vaccine injections. FOIA, or Freedom of Information Act emails obtained by the Daily Clout, show high-level officials at the so-called White House, as well as the Center for Death and Control, and the American Academy of Pediatricians, all knew that the COVID-19 vaccines were linked to myocarditis and death, yet they doubled down on the vaccine mandates anyway. The White Whorehouse and the CDC knew, as it turns out, back in April 2021, that's a long time ago, folks, that the Pfizer COVID-19 mRNA vaccine was linked to heart damage on an unprecedented scale for a vaccine, for a so-called vaccine. I got to keep modifying that. But they hid that knowledge from the public while pushing the not vaccine mandate, according to emails obtained via that FOIA request, which show a White Whorehouse communications team struggling to craft a cover-up message on email chains that included none other than America's Dr. Mengele, the notoriously evil Tony Fauci, then director of the NIAID and chief medical advisor to the senile imposter. Others on the list include CDC Director Rochelle Walensky, Dr. Janet Woodcock, then acting commissioner of the U.S. FDA, U.S. Surgeon General Vivek Murthy, and Dr. Francis Collins, then director of the NIH. A number of high-level public health officials, it said, worked with upper echelon leadership to craft what's now called the myocarditis email that minimized the relationship between the not vaccine injections and myocarditis. This, according to Amy Kelly, program director for the War Room Daily Clout Pfizer Document Analysis Project. And the story includes a whole list of officials here that are up to their satanic necks in the cover-up. And the story tells us that these damning emails were obtained by Edward Berkovich, one of 250 volunteer attorneys that Kelly oversees as part of that project, founded by best-selling author and journalist, former leftist, by the way, Naomi Wolf, in collaboration with Steve Bannon, former advisor to President Trump, and over 3,000 volunteer doctors, nurses, scientists, and others who are reviewing the documents. And so far, they've issued 89 investigative reports, including the one from October the 18th on the myocarditis cover-up, evident from these damning emails. Astonishingly, said Kelly, the emails revealed that the most senior of leaders, sick, all the way up to the White House, You know it, folks. Knew about heart damage linked to these mRNA vaccines, she said, yet they colluded behind the scenes to conceal this side effect. I wonder if that's really the proper term there either, from the American people. Anybody, though, she said, can study the three FOIA releases of the emails at dailyclout.io. And what I think's most important, she added, is to see who all is involved. Over 100 different people are on the emails, including a slew at the White House, CDC, U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, NIAID, Pfizer, various children's hospitals and organizations, as well as some external people. And my takeaway is from seeing all of this, all over the public health agencies, they all knew there was an issue with myocarditis dangers linked to the, not vaccines. Yet when you read through these things, you see they're crafting messages to downplay the significance of myocarditis and the vaccines all the way up to, say it with me, folks, the white whorehouse. And are you starting to see why that is the only proper descriptor now? Which even, says the story, created a 17-page official script to, quote, keep everyone on message. This email revelation, says the piece, was a frequent topic of discussion on a Saturday this last weekend at what was called the Summit for Truth, which brought together various leaders of the health freedom movement at Bethel Christian Fellowship Church in downtown Rochester, New York, where Naomi Wolf was the keynote speaker in a lineup that included other notables like Dr. Robert Malone, Dr. Ryan Cole, attorney Bobby Ann Cox, and Brownstone Institute publisher and writer Jeffrey Tucker. Wolf spoke about her journey from feminist icon to outcast from the leftist liberal media establishment when she dared to question the safety, of the COVID-19 shots. She's written two books on her experience investigating and reporting on the plandemic, including The Bodies of Others, The New Authoritarians, COVID-19 and the War Against the Human, and an upcoming book entitled Facing the Beast, Courage, Faith, and Resistance in a New Dark Age. And during that panel discussion on Saturday, Wolf called the White Whorehouse involvement in the cover-up of various dangers associated with the mandated Zyklon B injections, quote, absolutely shocking. And she added that Berkovich's FOIA request was aided by what she called a whistleblower at the CDC, who seemed to be, quote, throwing the White House under the bus because, quote, in addition to the pages he'd asked for, he got 46 pages he didn't request that showed the White House communications team was, quote, freaking out at the highest levels in April 2021 because news of blood clots and heart damage had reached him, she said. Yeah, not internally, folks, but I guess that means through the media, which wasn't supposed to talk about it. Quote, instead of coming clean with the American people and pulling this injection off the market, they looped in the other scumbags, including Fauci, Collins, Walensky, and they created a script, she said. A 17-page script, their word, which is wholly redacted, to keep everyone on message and downplay the dangers. And in fact, if you recall from 2021, rather than pulling this injection off the market, they mandated it. They doubled down, she said, and mandated it. She calls it a massive crime, which, you know what, folks, is arguably an understatement, because some of us would say it is treason, war on the American people, and if we still had a rule of law, and you've ever read the Constitution, you ought to know what that means. And ponder the irony. There still hasn't been a single impeachment of a single one of these absolute traitors. This just goes on and on, and the more you read about it, the more you find that it should be absolutely not only infuriating, but damning. Dr. Peter McCulloch, one of the most highly published cardiologists in the entire world, said that the Pfizer COVID-19 so-called vaccines should have been pulled from the market way back in January 2021 after, quote, no more than 50 deaths, the previous government standard when it came to the safety of a biologic product. He said FDA records show the agency expected a myocarditis risk from the mRNA COVID-19 vaccines as early as October of 2020. Let that sink in for a second. And nearly 2 months later, he noted, Pfizer covered up 38 additional deaths linked to their vaccine before the December 10, 2020 meeting of the FDA's Vaccines and Related Biological Products Advisory Committee. If they had reported those deaths, he said, there would have been a 3- to 4-fold excess cardiovascular risk with Pfizer in the core slides at that December 10, 2020 meeting, and Pfizer would never have been approved. And he said the subsequent myocarditis cover-up has killed untold thousands of Americans. The story goes on to talk about Dr. Bruce Boros, a Key West, Florida cardiologist who was one of America's first physicians to use ivermectin for early treatment of COVID-19 based on his research into the then-emerging literature. And now, he said, recent studies show that RNA from the COVID-19 not vaccines, quote, goes right to the heart. One study that applied the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines to heart muscle cells in culture, quote, showed direct evidence that within 48 hours there was heart dysfunction, mechanical and electrical chaos, he said. And he added, young athletes dropping dead from heart failure at unprecedented rates are, quote, almost assuredly suffering myocarditis symptoms brought on by the shots. Worse still, he said, quote, everybody who received the shot had some damage to the heart muscle. And they knew this, he said, in preclinical studies, and they covered it up. All the signals were there. The FDA went ahead and approved it anyway. Yeah, he said it's a money game, a eugenics game, and they're continuing to say that you need a booster. And now, he added, they claim every child in the world, quote, should get this shot for a virus that has been falsely normalized as dangerous when the risk, especially for children, is essentially zero when it comes to death. It saddens me, said Boros in conclusion. We need to remember this was created as a bioweapon and hold our government, sick, responsible. Unquote, folks. And you know what I'm going to say next, don't you? You better not hold your breath, but you had better be ready because they're not done. And from there, folks, I'm going to reprise a few of the stories that did not get played live yesterday on Tuesday's news because of a programming issue with the automation that runs this show, but they do fit the theme that continues today. I'm going to start that with the gang rape of the First Amendment has kind of reached a climax today as journalist Owen Schroyer is in Louisiana preparing to be incarcerated for the crime of free speech. But mostly for being a high-profile journalist who didn't buy the lie about the senile Biden Fuhrer having accumulated more votes, 81 million, than any person in American history, and any person with half a brain would ever even believe. As he prepared to enter 1984 martyrdom status for thought crimes as well, he released a video on X, the tweet service formerly known as Twitter, in which he announced he's opened a new Twitter account that will be run by a media team while he is incarcerated, and he encouraged people to come and check it out because there'll be daily updates and so forth. It's called @OwenSchroyer1776, and he did note that saying the word 1776 was one of the things that so upset Big Brother because they don't seem to care much about that date anymore or want to be reminded of what it once meant, and I do think it's important today to begin with at least a few seconds of what it was he had to say as he entered martyrdom.
Owen Schroyer here, and I am about to turn myself in to be a speech prisoner in Biden's America. Unfortunately, we knew that things would get this bad. Unfortunately, we knew the Democrats were this corrupt, and now I have to hit the front lines and be a speech prisoner in Biden's America.
He went on to detail some of the background associated with his earlier fight with Twitter over censorship and encouraged people to come to this new one with a reminder that
Owen Schroyer is back on Twitter right here at Owen Schroyer 1776. And that year, 1776, is extremely important, not just because it was the founding year of our country, but the U.S. government is arguing that it's illegal for me to say 1776 in Washington, D.C. Don't believe me? Check the U.S. government sentencing memo for yourself. They said that me chanting 1776 in Washington, D.C. is worthy of 60 days in prison. So, it's Owen Schroyer, 1776. Please share this video. Let people know I'm back on Twitter and follow this account for updates while I'm away. Godspeed and God bless.
Earlier during this now beyond Orwellian debacle, his team of lawyers released a legal brief and reply for the United States District Court in the District of Criminals, Columbia. Yeah, who are we kidding? Jim Hoft and the Gateway Pundit have it up if you'd like to read it. But even the introduction here makes it clear why this is such a red-letter day in the truest communist totalitarian sense. In a sentencing memorandum, it begins, that can most charitably be described as chilling, the government recommends a sentence of 120 days imprisonment based largely on what Mr. Schroyer said. Essentially, during the January 6th timeframe, they used the term riot in here, folks. I won't dignify it by even reading that. Sick doesn't seem to be enough because it wasn't a riot. What we saw with BLM and Antifa and all kinds of other things were real riots, just in case anybody's curious. January 6th is what happens when paid agents provocateurs acting on behalf of Big Brother try to get an actual riot started, but didn't quite succeed, even though they killed at least a few people in the process. Anyway, it continues, the memorandum represents a low water mark, I'd have to say yet another one, in the government's persecution of January 6th cases, taking direct aim at freedom of speech, and seeks to penalize Mr. Schroyer for his viewpoints, claiming apparently that his views are relevant offense conduct that must be considered in crafting a sentence sufficient, they note, to, properly punish Mr. Schroyer for thought crimes and speech crimes. They didn't say this, I will. It's also obviously very important to set a precedent that free speech no longer applies in Biden's America. Oh, and furthermore, to send a message to anybody else that might still think it does. Oh yeah, and speaking of messages, here's another sign of the times to kick things off today. As you may recall, last week, a California court actually read the Second Amendment and said, hey, shall not be infringed ought to mean something. And they overturned the state's communist gun ban. Well, and that's so incensed some of the other communists nationwide that they sprung into action. On Wednesday, says another piece from the Gateway Pundit, the leftist-controlled Massachusetts House of Representatives, SICK, passed H. 4135, which essentially says, shall not be infringed doesn't mean squat. It prohibits firearms in public spaces, including schools, polling places, and government buildings, all the better to steal the next election, cracks down on so-called ghost guns, which actually don't exist, because Big Brother has no authority to require registration to begin with, and tightens the state's already anti-constitutional ban on so-called assault weapons. While those who can read the Bill of Rights say that the bill, passed by a vote of 120-38, good grief, targets lawful gun owners while doing nothing, and that's the intent, obviously, to deter crime. Said Jim Wallace, executive director of the Gun Owners Action League, to the Associated Press, this is a tantrum. This is a flat-out tantrum. And all it does is go against us, the lawful people. There's nothing in here, he said, that goes after the criminals, unquote. And it's not like that hadn't been obvious forever. I'm going to call this a very much related story from Gun-Free California. And it's in the Daily Mail out of the UK, although they clearly don't get it. An upscale apartment complex they begin in Southern California. The Camden Harbor View Apartments in Long Beach have been plagued by a mob of teenagers and other criminals who have left tenants fearing for their safety, or worse. Residents of the expensive complex are demanding more security, especially after a string of arson fires, vehicle thefts, and assaults and break-ins in the complex over the last month. On Monday, speaking to a number of local news outlets, residents cited a wave of break-ins, burglaries, and physical assaults believed to be the work of the same group of minors or terrorists or, well, call them what you want, folks, but what you aren't allowed to do is defend yourself against them in the People's Republic. They said they've reached out to both management and the city in hopes of securing a solution. They showed security and cell phone videos of some of the incidents as proof, including one of the clips where teens appear to attack a man within the area. Another one shows a teen kicking in the resident's apartment doors before running away with a group of friends. Finally, one more, courtesy of KTLA, a resident said she was attacked by teens with a skateboard, which for her was the last straw. What's she going to do about it? That's the question. The tyrannical swamp regime, of course, intends to make the answer to that absolutely nothing. All right, that leads me to this story that I think really summarizes several of the things that we're trying to put together here today. This comes from Zero Hedge, of course, but originally written by Jonathan Turley, former professor of constitutional law at Harvard, back before they went completely woke. It was also up on Fox.com, and it concerns a poll released last week, he says, showing that an increasing number of citizens, and I would say increasingly dumbed down, no doubt, but not quite enough anyway, have now lost faith in our, quote, constitutional system and now view violence as warranted to silence any of those who hold opposing views. It is, he says, a crisis of faith that represents the greatest possible threat to our republic. And hey, see, he even knew at least once upon a time what form of government we were supposed to have. You got that right. This loss of faith, he continues, and fealty constitutes one of the greatest crises that our nation has faced since its foundation. And I think on that score, he's pretty darn close to the mark. Here's the column, it says. beginning with that recent poll that he called startling, showing a majority of voters not only view the opposing party as a threat to the nation, but that it justifies violence in order to combat their agenda. And here's the sad truth, folks. At least half of them are actually right. What the poll doesn't explain, that I certainly need to right up front here, is that it's not about justifying violence outright. It's about recognizing that when they come and use violence against you to steal from you, to kill you, to destroy your children and your lives, then, in fact, that is exactly why the Second Amendment was put in place to begin with. Back to the piece. The poll by University of Virginia Center for Politics shows a nation at war with itself, he says. 52% of Biden supporters, and you know right there, if they actually support that cretin, what does that say about their own intelligence? Well, they say Republicans are now a threat to the American way of life that they're pushing, and we know what that includes, while 47% of Trump supporters say the same about the far-left Democrats. And are there any other kind nowadays? One thing's for sure, not in the swamp, folks. Among the Biden supporters, he continues, 41% now believe violence is justified to stop Republicans from achieving their goals. All right, I got to insert this. Quick aside here. That used to be called Truth, Justice, and the American Way, if you've ever seen the introduction to the old Superman TV show. Now the left, the very same left, derisively scoffs at that very set of words. While an almost identical percentage, 38% of Trump supporters, embrace violence to stop the communist left. And he didn't put it that way, but I will. Not surprisingly, and here's where he begins to drop the ball, folks, but at least it's educational. Not surprisingly, many of these people have lost faith in democracy. Do I even need to say it? Regular listeners here know. Such democracies, as Madison wrote, have been as short in their lives as they have been violent in their deaths. Yep. Case in point, right here, plan out. Anyway, some 31% of Trump supporters believe that the nation should explore alternative forms of government. Hey, how about the one that was actually put in there in genuine print? And I guess the sad point here, folks, is that a lot of Trump supporters don't understand what that form of government was supposed to be either. While roughly a quarter, 24% of Biden-Fuhrer supporters question the viability of democracy. And these idiots don't even know what a senile guy looks like, much less what the Constitution says about democracy. And as listeners here know, it's not in there. Not once, not anywhere. But in spite of that, this sentence really nails it. Faith, says Professor Turley, is the one thing that no system of government can exist or do without. Without faith in the underlying values of a constitutional system, authority rests on a mix of coercion and capitulation. Right, Jenna? For years, he says, I've written about this growing loss of faith and how it's been fueled by our intellectual and political elites. In the echo chamber of news and socialist media, citizens constantly hear how the opposing party is composed of traitors and how the constitutional system works to protect enemies of the people. Viewers can now get a steady diet of figures like MSNBC commentator L.A. Mistel, who called the U.S. Constitution trash and argued that we should just dump it. Well, I guess that's a done deal now, isn't it? He goes on to describe example after example, from Columbia University's so-called professor of law, Rosa Brooks, to the New York Times, to the evil Pocahontas, Liz Warren of Massachusetts, to the hatefully anti-constitutional Chuckie Schumer of New York, to the occasional Cortex itself. He even rightfully criticizes Donald Trump, who's demonstrated no great familiarity with the document. No wonder, he says, the Constitution is now viewed as a threat to our nation rather than the very thing that defines us. It's designed to restrain the majority and protect those who are at least popular in our society. And in the end, he says, correctly, a Constitution remains a covenant between citizens and their government, but also between each other as citizens. And it demands a leap of faith, a commitment that despite our differences, we will defend the rights of our neighbors. He notes the Constitution isn't particularly poetic. It was written by the ultimate wonk, James Madison, and it spent as much time on not only what divided us, but recognized the danger of factions and created a system to bring such divisions to the surface where they could be addressed rather than fester. The problem is, have we now reached a time when things that divide us will now overcome what unites us? This isn't the first age of rage, he notes. History is full of it. Remember what Thomas Jefferson said about John Adams and the Alien and Sedition Acts? Correctly, your host notes. Turley remembers that back in 1867, John Stuart Mill warned that all it takes for evil to prevail is for good men to do nothing. And while your host certainly agrees with that, folks, I have to close by noting that if those so-called good men are utterly ignorant of what the real truth is, what the real law is, they won't know what to do. And therein lies a big part of the problem. Sadly, far too many Americans are just plain ignorant and proud of it. That reminds me of what author Robert A. Heinlein once said, "Stupidity is the only universal capital crime." Thanks for being with us today, and may Yahuwah bless you and yours.